The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Understand something, and this has to be very clear. The Democrats and those radicals you just saw on MSNBC and CNN and Joe Scarborough and that entire crowd, right? They had Robert Kagan's wife, who brought this entire debacle on Ukraine on us. They have no intention of giving up power. We have a three-phase, and this is why it's so important for this audience. You're the backbone of this movement. We have two things we're going to talk about today. The get out the vote effort, focused on our first phase, which is November 5th. Then the second is to make sure that they cannot steal the election with Mark Elias and others of these, the nullification project that they're bringing in, which goes from November 5th all the way to Inauguration Day. But January 6th being a key part of that. We'll talk about in a second. The other is the delegitimization process. I have never heard, and I think most people would agree, the rhetoric that's come out about American citizens calling this audience, not just Donald Trump and not the people around Donald Trump, that's bad enough, calling us fascists, but calling you fascists, saying that that fantastic, that amazing rally in Madison Square Garden that could never be pulled off by Kamala Harris or the Democrats. With that energy and people from Tulsi Gabbard to Elon Musk, just the broad cross-section. You had of American entrepreneurs, Vivek Ramaswamy. You had these powerhouses up there, right? And they're trying to smirch that with one influencer's kind of throwaway, not funny line. I can tell you in coming from and being a political prisoner in a federal prison, that the young men in this country that are African-American and Hispanic detest Kamala Harris.
Bannon is back. Liz Cheney's political prisoner has been released from jail. He's out of prison. I mean, this is our kind of patriot, right? He's let go, what was it, 3:15 a.m. this morning, and then he's on his show in New York City. Just 5-6 hours later, pretty amazing. And by the way, as you heard there, he is sounding the alarm. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to this live show, the live video stream at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. We also get the nightly replay at Live from America TV. That's LFA TV. Also at Rumble. So we've got some heavy subjects to get to today. So to start with, maybe something a little bit lighter. This is from the Daily Beast on Bannon's incarceration. Steve Bannon, alleged insurrectionist and dark lord of the alt-right, it says, is holding lessons in government and politics to help fellow inmates reintegrate into today's world. How perfect is this? The radical left, they're doing everything that they can to try to make sure that prison inmates can vote. And here is Steve Bannon, for his part, trying to make sure that they vote Republican. So there you go. He's in there educating the inmates. And from some other reports that I heard, he was quite popular. They enjoyed, the prisoners enjoyed learning at the feet of Steve Bannon. Now, more seriously, as I say, he gets out of jail. He immediately goes to his broadcasting facilities and says, hey, Trump's people better not be complacent. You're hearing all this good news. You're hearing all the polls. You're hearing about the early voting numbers. But he says they're going to do, what did he say? They have no intention of giving up power. And so there he is, not only talking about November 5, but How, if, supposing Trump does win on November 5, and of course it's going to be drug out for 3 or 4 days. They've already told us this in some of the swing states. But it's not just about winning on November 5. It's how do you secure the victory? Because they'll try to take it away from you. They'll try to steal it away. And so he's calling for people to wake up, to not get complacent. And it's easy to get a little bit complacent just looking at some of the positive polling that's coming in and knowing that President Trump in 2016 and 2020, I mean, he was behind in the polls going into those two elections. And then he actually won both of them, leave aside the steal of 2020. He won that one, too, convincingly. What will happen this time around? I forget which report it was from, but if he wins all the Sun Belt states, including Nevada, that still leaves him just short. Assuming this, it comes down to those seven swing states. If he wins the four in the Sun Belt, he's got to break through in the Rust Belt, either with Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, or Michigan. Now, there could be some surprises in states like New Hampshire or Virginia or New Mexico. And I know Trump supporters are getting excited about the prospect of him, taking New York, for example, taking a blue state, surprise, shocking the world. But if this comes down to a razor-thin margin like the last two have, the second one, of course, more because of the cheating, but still, they're not going to let go. They have no intention of giving up power. Lee Smith had an article, an important article, about the fact that they, even if Trump wins next week, these radicals still have control for another 2 months. Let me just remind you of what my father wrote in the September Trumpet magazine. It says, more importantly, Obama's message suggested that the November election is the big thing, but I don't believe that is the big thing in his mind at all. I believe he has a civil war or a race war in mind, possibly aimed around the inauguration of Donald Trump. This was just in the September issue of the Trumpet magazine. This one here, why is God protecting this man? I mentioned on yesterday's program, God's hand, his fingerprints, all over what we're witnessing. And I would just add to what Lee Smith warns about, and Steve Bannon's doing the same thing. They're not talking about God's perspective, of course. But God's going to intervene to make sure Trump gets back somehow or another. And judging by the last couple of election cycles, we may be in for some shocking surprises next week. Maybe it'll be shocking in the he wins convincingly sense, but maybe it'll be shocking in the razor-thin cheating sense, just like last time. He says here, I believe Obama has a civil war or a race war in mind, possibly aimed around the inauguration of Donald Trump. His big goal has always been to blot out the name of Israel. That means America especially, but also Britain and the Jewish state in the Middle East. We have to keep in mind Obama's big goal. He wants to blot out the nation. He wants to blot out the name of Israel, the name of America. He's carrying out. These are the final stages of the fundamental transformation of the United States of America. Listen to the dear leader. I think he was in Pennsylvania last night. This is clip two.
So the man holds this big rally at Madison Square Garden. The warm-up speakers were saying the most, were trotting out and peddling the most racist, sexist, bigoted stereotypes. One guy called Puerto Rico, quote, an island of garbage. Now, the
We can come later to the Puerto Rico joke. That was the whole point of the monologue on Morning Meltdown today. A joke! So they've got Hitler and they've got the Puerto Rico joke. But leave that aside. Here's Obama. His wife made an appearance after being in Honolulu for weeks and weeks and weeks, leading up to supposedly the most important election in American history. She finally makes an appearance. Same with her husband, and they're both just shocked. How could this race even be close? Listen to both of them here. This is clip three.
And that is the reason why this election should not be close. It should be clear.
I got to ask myself, well, why on earth is this race even close? I lay awake at night wondering what in the world is going on.
How is it even close? They know what's coming, you see. And they're preparing for phase two, just like Bannon alludes to in his first broadcast back after 4 months in prison. They put him away as a political prisoner. Joe Bama's DOJ. They had assassins nearly take out President Trump twice just this past summer. And now they're preparing for some kind of... You thought the resistance was strong in 2016? In 2020? Lee Smith talking about the Hitler-Nazi narrative. He writes, the propaganda campaign labeling Donald Trump as an aspiring dictator determined to use the military and national security apparatus against his political opponents is designed not to affect the upcoming election, but rather to shape the post-election environment. That was what was interesting just in watching the Meltdown monologue this morning, is I think it took them 15, 16 minutes before they referenced Hitler. I was expecting that in minute two, maybe minute one. As it is, it's Puerto Rico! Hey, you've offended the Puerto Rico voters. Now, maybe there's one last hope that we can win Pennsylvania because of the 200,000-plus Puerto Rican voters in that state. But then they came around to Hitler. Why? I mean, why Hitler in the last 10 days? It's a sign of desperation, for sure. But Lee Smith continues, it is the central piece of a narrative that, by characterizing Trump as a tyrant, indeed likening him to Hitler, establishes the conditions for violence. Not just another attempt on Trump's life, but political violence on a massive scale intended to destabilize the country. Their plan is a violent insurrection. If they can't win at the ballot box, and more of them are seeing that that's probably not going to happen, they'll resort to violence. They've done it this summer. They've locked people away. They've locked the January 6th protesters in prison. I saw another one sentenced to a year and a day in jail for his involvement. What do you suppose his involvement was? Probably wandering around taking selfies. Now he's in prison, just like Bannon was. Just like Navarro was, just like they wish Donald Trump was. The bullets are flying in one direction, and that would be aimed at Donald Trump and his supporters. And like Bannon said this morning, listen, they're coming after you next. If you're standing for the truth, if you're defending the Republic, they're going to come after you. They've proven it. Look at their fruits. Jesus said to judge by the fruits. Look at their actions. Look at what they're doing. And how rich of them to come out and say, Donald Trump might weaponize the DOJ. He might use the DOJ to go after political opponents. Hello? That's happening. It's happening right now. Steve Bannon is proof of it. The whole January 6th committee was unconstitutional. It was just loaded with Democrats. It wasn't bipartisan at all. And you hear Liz Cheney and the other guy, Kinzinger, you hear them talk today. Of course, they're Democrats through and through. That's why they got blown away in their reelection bids, or at least Cheney. Kinzinger bowed out because he knew he was going to lose. What did Cheney lose by in Wyoming? And yet Kamala's out there trotting her out as if this is going to be some big endorsement for her. So many of these people, they're delusional in their reasoning. But don't think for a second that even if they lose convincingly next week, don't think that they have true intentions of just letting go of power peacefully, making sure there's a peaceful transition. Look at what Obama did in 2016 as he was coming to the mic saying, yeah, one thing about America, it's going to be a peaceful transition. And he was unleashing Brennan and Clapper and Comey and McCabe and Strzok and Page as they were persecuting the Trump campaign from the get-go, lying to federal judges from the get-go, and continuing on in the case of the FISA apps, four separate times, 13 months or so, lying, spying. They wanted to lock him up. President Trump talked about locking her up in 2016. He never did do it. Why? Because he said he thought it would be bad for the country. He said he wanted to bring the country together. This is Hitler, I guess. He's already had 4 years in office. Judge by the fruits. Judge by the fruits. Listen again to Steve Bannon from earlier today. This is clip 11.
You know, Nancy Pelosi sent me to a federal prison. She sent me to a federal prison as a political prisoner to do two things, to make sure that she tried to tamp down the power of this show, right? Tamp down the power of the show, and also to break me. Nancy Pelosi, take out your number two pencil and write this down. This show has never been more powerful. The voices behind it have never been more powerful. The audience has never been more powerful. And we're going to deliver a knockout blow to your progressive insanity on 5 November, and then we're going to secure the deal after that. And number two, the 4 months in federal prison not only didn't break me, it empowered me. I am more energized and more focused than I've ever been in my entire life. And I can see clearly, just like in 2016 and in 2020, exactly what's going on here and what we have to do to defeat it.
Isn't it a shame that more Republicans don't talk like him? He's got some courage. You can see why Donald Trump had him as part of his team, at least for a short while in that first term. You wonder where he's going to be with the second one, or if he's going to be anywhere at all. But here's a man of tremendous courage. Courage! He's exposing a lot of evil. This Lee Smith piece, it says, by vilifying Trump as a despotic madman who must be stopped before he can commence his reign of terror, the regime's propaganda apparatus not only slanders Trump, but also preemptively threatens the reputation as well as the livelihood and perhaps the liberty of current military personnel. It says the point is to push the military against Trump. When the time comes to act, will you stand for democracy or side with a tyrant who sees the military only as an instrument to advance his personal interests? You begin to connect all the dots. John Kelly saying, yeah, he admired Hitler because, Hitler's generals were loyal. You've got Kelly, who was a military man, served in Vietnam, lost a son in Iraq. But he's lost the truth. And now he's blinded by rage. And he's lying to get Trump. And here's Lee Smith, helpfully. He's been on this show, by the way. We need to get him back on. He's an influential journalist or opinion writer, whatever you want to call him. He's connecting the dots for us, saying, look, the point of this Hitler narrative, as crazy, as wacko as it is, you know, and I heard a little bit of Laura and Jesse last night, just kind of making fun of it, and fine, it is laughable. It's ridiculous. All of these Jewish Americans showing up at Madison Square Gardens, showing up for the Nazi rally, really? I think one of the two commentators said, I'm not even going to bring it up again. It's so cuckoo. Well, but there's a strategy at play here. This is part of the plan. I'll get to Ben Rhodes' diatribe here in a second. I mean, they're not going to let it go. And even if they know a majority of Americans reject it and vote Trump into power next week, they're going to use this narrative to divide the military. Remember, they've got two and a half months left in power after November 5. My father in that September issue talked about the plan, perhaps, to trigger a war around Inauguration Day. That's tomorrow's news today. I mean, at least if you compare it next to what Lee Smith says, what Steve Bannon's now saying. If you don't have a subscription, by the way, to the Trumpet magazine, make sure you call our operators today and request your free copy. It's 1-866, that's the 800 number, 930-3024. There's a purpose for this false fake narrative. It says, for instance, last week the Atlantic's chief editor-in-chief Jeffrey Goldberg quoted former Trump, well, he talks about the John Kelly revelation and so on. And then Lee Smith says here, the purpose of the Hitler narrative is not to alter the electoral preferences of left-wing media audiences already solidly in the anti-Trump column, but rather to justify taking extreme measures against the Republican candidate and the America First movement and ensure that the bulk of the military sides with the anti-Trump plot. You've got to side with us. The radical left, the communist left, they're going to apply some intense pressure on the military elite, saying you've got to side with us, because listen, this is Hitler. This is Hitler 2.0. We can't let this happen. Never mind what happens in the so-called democratic vote. Once Trump, let's assume he does win convincingly, or he wins next week, you're not going to hear them talking about saving democracy, certainly not at the ballot box. No, they're going to talk about, hey, we've got to use the military now to save democracy. You can see right through all of their nefarious plotting. Insurrection, through and through. It says, for example, last week the New York Times published a long interview with a scholar of fascism who declared that Trump is a fascist. So they're all getting in on it. It's not just the Atlantic. It's not just Jeffrey Goldberg. Kamala took it. She ran with it. She came out with a pre-prepared statement. No questions after that, but she had to make sure, I played it for you yesterday, that you understood that she believes Trump is a fascist. And then she said it later that night at the CNN town hall. And now you've got all the talking heads. We've got another one for today. As I said on yesterday's show, I mean, you could just pull together the montages we've had. From this year alone, Trump is Hitler, Trump is Hitler, Trump is Hitler. And we'd probably have, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes of content by now. Here's today's episode, if you want to call it that, clip 15.
1 week to Election Day. Who would like to take the Nazi issue?
Should I do
that? Is that a trick question?
I mean, I don't know what the opposite of a Nazi is, but you are asking for it if you put it someplace in a venue like that. It is not like they suddenly stumble into ancient burial ground. You pick the venue knowing the history.
Donald Trump is not a normal candidate, and I think it's not a stretch to call Donald Trump a fascist.
It's not, the Republican Party is not a traditional American party. It's an extremist movement.
Yeah.
And that's how we really have to view
it. Indeed. And the thing they're embracing, which is insane, is Hitlerism.
Excuse me. June 14th of 1940, on page 3 of the Post-Dispatch, Adolf Hitler was interviewed. And I'm quoting from his article where he was interviewed. He said, therefore, I say America is for Americans. Stephen Miller took the stage on Sunday evening, and he said, America is for Americans. And only Americans. He is parroting the exact words of Adolf Hitler. Somebody ought to really think about the level of hypocrisy and hate that this campaign is focused on.
For 6 hours at that rally, it was what an amazing and frightening and awful spectacle that was. And of course, the comic was terrible. But as Claire said, the whole thing, it is not only justified, but necessary and inevitable to compare that rally to the Nazi rally that was held there before World War II.
The propaganda meant to establish a predicate to employ violence to stop Trump has been reinforced at the highest levels of the Democratic Party. He goes on and quotes the fake president, who said he couldn't be sure that there would be no violence following a Trump victory. And then he had to correct himself and say, well, I mean, if Trump loses, he won't accept it, and then, you know, he's going to trigger the violence. But here again, you've got the fake president a lot of times saying the quiet part out loud, saying that if Trump wins, I can't guarantee that it will be a smooth transfer. Really? He mentions Jamie Raskin. We played the clip earlier this year. He advertised a more specific scenario leading to violence when he promised that Congress will remove Trump by invoking Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which prohibits anyone engaged in insurrection or rebellion from holding federal office. All that they need. We saw it in Trump's first term. They just need a one-seat majority in the House. And then here come the impeachments. Here come all of the actions to keep him from taking office because, well, he's an insurrectionist. They have no intentions of letting go of power. And we've got to prepare ourselves, maybe brace ourselves, for whatever might happen next week and beyond. You know, Jack Posobiec was on with Steve Bannon this morning talking about his son. I think he's 6 years old, and I guess his son called Bannon on the phone this morning and talked with him, and Posobiec's point was, you know, my son knows a political prisoner in his own country, and you know, he sees Bannon as an uncle, and he's just talking about some of the things that his son at 6 years of age now sees and experiences that you never could have imagined in a generation or two ago. I've talked about my own son, or I talked with him, I should say, recently. He's a fair bit older. He's in his 20s, but same thing. He's like, you know, what kind of violence are we staring at here following November 5? Our children are being... Nancy Pelosi, she had an interview in the Rolling Stone. She says her only objective left in life is to stop Trump. To stop Trump from ever entering the Oval Office again. It can't happen. Why? Well, he's Hitler. That's why. You see how important this narrative... As crazy as it is, you see how important the narrative is to these people. Because they are crazy. They are Hitler-esque in their thinking. It says here, the most significant post-election scenarios were drafted by Rosa Brooks, a former Obama Pentagon official. Here come the Obama acolytes yet again. I mean, they come out of the woodwork. They're all over the place. They're drawing up plans and scenarios. Remember, in 2021, the Time Magazine article where they went back and looked at 2020 and basically said how we had all the soldiers in place, people, Democrats were ready to take to the streets if Donald Trump somehow beat the steal. The thing about it this time around, though, just to add to, give another dimension to what Bannon is saying, and Lee Smith in this case, Obama is losing power. Whether he realizes it or accepts it or not, he's losing it. I heard it on one of the shows last night. I can't remember which, but they said the Obama coalition, it's breaking apart. So he doesn't have as much power as he had in 2020 or 2016. I mean, just think back for a moment to 2020. I looked at my notes from the day after the media coronated Joe Biden as the fake president of the United States. And I was just going through my monologue from that show 4 years ago. And basically, I was saying, can it get any crazier than it's already been? The 15 days to stop the spread in March that turned into 15 months? And all these businesses shut down and people holing up in their basements and then receiving checks in the mail from the government and the government adding trillions to the deficit. And then all, and this is the most important point, 100 million mail-in ballots just sent all over the country. It was the perfect storm for an election steal. And look at, by the way, look at how much you're seeing. You had the case of the ballot box in Washington State. Somebody lit the ballots on fire on the inside. And then you're, you know, this case in Georgia where they're saying, no, it's got to be certified the day it happens. Even if there's cases of election fraud, just certify it and shove it on through. And then you've got other cases where the DOJ is, I mean, they're suing Virginia because Virginia took 6,000 names off the voter rolls because they were illegal. That's the DOJ trying to just basically throw away the rules. So you've got all these news. I mean, this is before the election news. Democrats trying to get rid of the rules. No voter ID. You've heard it all. But, you know, I'd like to sit down with some of those conservative deniers, denying that there was any cheating, and ask them, look, given even what we're hearing in the news cycle today, are you saying that none of them would have cheated 4 years ago? These people have exposed themselves as liars, cheats, thieves, murderers in some cases. This is right out of the abundance of the heart. Jesus exposed what goes on in the human heart, and it's not pretty. It's not. Jeremiah the prophet did in chapter 17. The apostle Paul did in Romans 8. They have no intention of letting go of their power. They're not going to go down without a fight. Now, again, God may, he may have a way here in just the coming months of stunning them or putting them on their back foot or something. I don't know. It's whatever God wants. It's like I said yesterday, what's uppermost in God's mind is his work. This family operation, this message that's going out, this warning message delivered in love for a people that are dying because of sickness and disease, spiritually speaking, sin. God wants us to turn our hearts to him in repentance. So this Obama disciple, she's over at she's formerly of the Pentagon. And it says, whose 2020 war gaming with the Transition Integrity Project, the TIP, has been credited by the left-wing press for its accuracy. This sounds pretty great. We've got to have a war game plan in the event that we lose, because we've got to save democracy, you see? Her work is widely acknowledged as the left's roadmap for post-election contingency planning. You know, Lee Smith's not alone here. As I say, Steve Bannon said as much this morning. Sundance over at Conservative Treehouse, sounding the same alarms. It's not enough just to try to stop the steal. They're not going to stop at stopping the steal. They've got the next phase. All right, what do we do after November 5 to stop Trump? To steal it away, to delegitimize his presidency, whatever it is that we can do to attack, always, always, always. Well, here again, just looking at the spiritual dimension, God says he's going to intervene to save Israel by the hand of Jeroboam. And so, yeah, like I said yesterday, you look back at the head tilt, you look at the other assassination attempt, you look at the disastrous debate, June 27, you look at the installation of Kamala, and then Tim Walz, by the way, sleeping with a woman who she's high up in the CCP. Yeah, it's revealed yesterday by the Daily Mail. It's disqualifying. It's another Eric Swalwell. How are these people in such high positions in American government caught with Chinese spies, or in the case of Walls, the daughter of a communist? You would think it'd be disqualifying. It happened back in the 80s and 90s. But still, what is it with this man's love for the CCP? He can't speak highly enough of them. What would happen if Don Jr., if he had an affair with a Chinese woman whose dad was right up there with Xi Jinping? How do you think Jake Tapper would treat that subject? You see how they manufacture outrage? The Puerto Rico joke? Seriously? There's garbage in Puerto Rico? You can't get the truth, except in a few a few places that are left proclaiming truth. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Lee Smith says the most alarming scenario involves political and military officials resisting efforts to federalize their National Guard units and send them to quell anti-Trump protests in major U.S. cities. That is, the post-election playbook calls for or takes for granted widespread violence so intense that the president invokes the Insurrection Act. They've still got 2.5 months in power, remember? He says, finally, this is where the political violence cultivated by the destructive left is leading. Blood-soaked streets and a divided military. The purpose of the Hitler narrative is to force members of the military to turn against Trump. After all, loyalty to the Constitution means fighting Hitler, not obeying his orders. You've got to fight Hitler, right? This is justified. I mean, it's an insurrection act is justified to keep Hitler out of office. He says, finally, on this view, Trump has polarized the country so profoundly that he's ultimately responsible, the Hitler narrative view, that he's ultimately responsible for the attempt on his own life. He's talking about how there were some that, even after the assassination attempts on Trump's life, blame Trump. Yeah, he quotes from David Frum, I think it is, at The Atlantic. He blamed Trump. It's Trump's fault. Yesterday, I played that clip from Joe Rogan. If there was an attempt on Joe Biden's life, they'd probably have seized our guns by now. We'd be hearing it nonstop. There'd be no end to the coverage. It says here, but that is another inversion of reality, tailored to suit the bloodlust of a dark regime. It's the logic of terror. It is only the violence of our victims that drove us to slaughter them. They're so violent. They're so dangerous. We've got to slaughter them. The Jan 6 protesters, they're so violent. They're so dangerous. We've got to lock them up for good. Listen to one more bit from Steve Bannon's show earlier today. This is clip 12.
They are signaling you right now what they're going to do. Every day, with you see, oh, we're going to delay. We can't count the vote for 7 days. We're going to take mail-in ballots 5 days later. Every day after November, the evening of November 5th, is going to be Stalingrad, where Mark Elias is in court. And they're going to do this to slow it down. If they can't take it away from Trump, if they can't nullify it right there, they want to at least delegitimize his victory. Remember, Jamie Raskin is out there dovetailing off of Nancy Pelosi's interview in the Rolling Stone, where she says, I only have one purpose in my life. My purpose is to make sure that Donald Trump is never reelected president of the United States and he never sets foot into the White House again. And Jamie Raskin has been very upfront. If they take the House even by a single vote, 218 to 217, what they will do is sit there and say that Trump is an insurrectionist, that, hey, Bannon and Havarti went to prison. Trump's been indicted. He's an insurrectionist, and he cannot He cannot take the office of the presidency. All that's in front of us.
They're signaling, as he said there at the start, they're signaling what they're going to do. Remember all the signals ahead of 2020? Yeah, there's going to be the red wave, but listen, this year we're going to have to count ballots for days and days and days. And so the blue wave will come in. Finally, it'll come in a little more slowly. How did they know? How did they know how Joe Biden, running the campaign from his basement, how did they know he was going to come out victorious? Well, they had other plans in place. The Time magazine article from 21 says so. They had a lot of operations ready to go if it went one direction or the other. They were ready. The soldiers were on call. Ben Rhodes, here again, the Obama sycophant. Trump is closing in a way that makes it impossible to normalize or rationalize the virulent, racialized us versus them hate that has been his animating political purpose. I saw a tweet of, it was Bill and Hillary Clinton in 2005, pictured at Donald Trump's wedding with Melania. And the caption was, you know, the Clintons attend Hitler's wedding. You see all kinds of jokes like that on social media. Oh, Hitler brushed his teeth, so did Donald Trump. There you go. What a perfect parallel. Ben Rhodes says, you can be upset about the failures of globalization and establishments without hating whole groups of people. You saw the big tent, Ben Rhodes, at Madison Square Garden. This is like one guy said on the news last night. I mean, I've never been to such a diverse group. I think the only people that aren't at this rally are Nazis. You have every race. You have men, women, you have children. People of all religions, ethnicities. People waving Israeli flags in Madison Square Garden. And then Mika saying the next day, yeah, it was Hitler-esque. Ben Rhodes, another tweet. Trump, like his fellow traveling nationalist autocrats, has no solutions to the problems that have angered populations around the world. He just tells you who to hate. This is Ben Rhodes. He worked for Obama. He was Obama's right-hand man. Trump is many things, but he's no joke. He represents an old, dark, and deeply dangerous brand of fascistic politics that is always present under the surface. It's always there. He's always a danger. He's always spewing hate. It says here, as his fascist rally made clear, this is now a mainstream movement in the United States. It's a mainstream movement. So there's fascists all around. He had this big blow up on CNN, Mehdi Hassan. He's a rat. He loves terrorists, this guy. He implies that, I think it's the Jewish guy, the conservative, he implies that he's a Nazi. And then the Jew implies that Hassan's a terrorist. And so CNN fires the Jew, of course, and apologizes to Mehdi. There you go. Listen, speaking of signals, Steve Bannon says they're signaling what they're going to do. This was Victoria Nuland. She's married to Robert Kagan. He wrote a piece last year. Sundance was all over this a week or so ago. Kagan wrote a piece basically justifying an assassination attempt on Donald Trump. He was one of the first to say we've got to take him out some way or another. And then you had all those images over the last 18 months with Caesar, who was assassinated. And now we've actually had two assassination attempts. Victoria Nuland, I mean, she's one of the neocons in government. She loves prosecuting wars around the world. It's good for business. Listen to her with Rachel Maddow last night, clip 16.
Third election in a row. in which Russia has tried to interfere, yes, to try to get Trump into the White House. How do you assess the magnitude and the type of interference they're attempting this year compared to what they've done in his previous two elections?
Well, as you said earlier, Rachel, he's at it again. This time he's not even trying to hide his hand, and he has far more sophisticated tools. You know, his AI is better, so he can make these fake videos. He has done things like spend $10 million trying to buy American influencers and get them parroting his lines and not even know it's happening. But he's also got a brand new, very, very powerful tool, which is Elon Musk and X. You know, in 2020, the social media companies worked hard with the U.S. government to try to do content moderation, to try to catch this stuff as it was happening. But this time, we have Elon Musk talking directly to the Kremlin and ensuring that every time the Russians put out something like this, it gets 5 million views on X before anybody can catch it. So it's quite dangerous.
I can't believe how just casually she says, yeah, in 2020, the social media companies worked hard with the U.S. government to try to do content moderation, to control the flow of information, in other words. We're proud of this. In 2020, the deep state worked with social media to censor messages, to censor misinformation. And she just casually makes the comment, but the signal, Russian interference. Notice Maddow set it up by saying they've tried to do it. They've tried to interfere for Trump three times now, 16, 20, and 24. And so again, what are they signaling for after November 5? If it doesn't go their way, we will see pretty soon. As I said at the top, some heavy topics to get into. I'll tell you what, we'll take a short break and then we'll finish on just a couple of lighter topics that I think you'll enjoy. You're listening to Stephen Fleury and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily news, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to TrumpetDaily.com.
A little bit awkward there, but that's, of course, what everyone's kind of poking fun at. You all say your name, and then the crowd's like, what do we do? Bill, what do we do next? No, they just went silent. But before that, what stood out to me was the chant, Kamala, Kamala. That's closer to a Nazi rally than anything you saw at Madison Square Garden on Sunday night. That's the truth. That's the truth. There are people that are just brainwashed in the United States. I was thinking this morning, even if Trump won comfortably at the ballot box next week, it's still going to be hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact that tens of millions of people voted for her. Given what's happening in the country today, given what the prices are at the grocery store or what's happening at the southern border and now all of U.S. cities because of it. The endless wars, as Trump's people keep saying, the hundreds of billions going overseas to things that most Americans don't care about, at least not not as much as they care about what's happening here at home. I mentioned earlier, well, we played the Dear Leaders clip where he's really offended by the Puerto Rico joke. And so is the regime media. Listen to the talking heads as they explode over these last couple days. Clip 17.
You know how many Puerto Rican voters there are in Pennsylvania? 273,000. This is going to cost him votes. And a substantial Puerto Rican vote, also in Michigan. And I've worked. These are very prideful people. They describe that they're Puerto Ricans first. They describe that is their identity marker. See how many Puerto Rican voters there are in swing states. And there's a lot, and they much more identify with their island than almost anybody else around the world.
We can talk about the electoral implications of the comment that was at the Madison Square Garden rally in terms of how many Puerto Rican Americans there are in a state like Pennsylvania.
Puerto Ricans, even those living in Puerto Rico, are Americans. They're American citizens.
We have been talking about the Trump rally calling Puerto Ricans garbage.
This is not the first time that Donald Trump has said disparaging things or uninformed things about Puerto Rico.
Under the Trump administration, over 3,000 Puerto Ricans died due to Donald Trump's intentional neglect of the island after one of the worst natural disasters and hurricanes in American history.
Think about all the filth that so many of these people you just saw are actively promoting to spread around the world. And it just takes one joke, to, and they can manufacture this outrage so quickly. So, I mean, and they're all in unison, and they're all saying the same thing. You look at how much times have changed. This is from, I believe this show is from the 1970s. It might be just a little bit before my time. I saw a few repeats over the years. But here's clip 13.
So I was wondering, man. I mean, you know, maybe, well, I mean, I know you ain't got much room, but you think maybe just for one night, you know, so my sister and little boy could see?
Hey, man, we got plenty of room.
Oh, man.
No, we don't. No, we don't. All our rooms are filled.
What?
All our rooms are filled.
With what?
Hair. I mean, and Julio, I'd appreciate it very much if you would leave, because you're standing in a spot where some fresh air ought to be.
Oh, man.
Hey, Julio, my home is your home, brother.
Oh, thanks, Labar. That's great, man. Listen, I'm going to be right back. It's only going to be for one day. Thank you, man.
Let me tell you something. I'm only going to tell you this one time and one time only. I don't want any Puerto Ricans living in my house.
And he went on and repeated it 3-4 times. He doesn't want any Puerto Ricans living in his house. There's another episode, Sam told me, where he talked about the garbage in the Puerto Ricans' home. That's from 1974. That's the same decade when Archie Bunker was popular. How times have changed. The woke society that we're in, all around us, people hypersensitive, people pushing agendas. I'm not saying that was, the halcyon days of a utopian yesteryear, the 70s. The 70s had its share of problems and difficulties to sort through. But you look at the political correctness run amok and where we are today and people taking themselves so seriously, they can't laugh at anything. I'm not saying that guy's joke the other night was even funny, but he's an insult comic. And he said far worse online, this guy. And here are Democrats who rush to manufacture outrage in the hope that it will benefit them politically. Well, we're going to have a lot to cover in the days ahead. Can't very well make a very big dent through my notes, given all that's happening. But it'll be exciting to move through it with all of you in attendance. So we'll look forward to seeing you again on tomorrow's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. See you next time.